All right, we'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Division to order, and Representative Falk moves the minutes of February 25th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Members, first of all, introduction. There are a bunch of Burnsville students sitting here. You probably see them walking around the halls. What'd you tell me? There's how many in your senior class? Anyone? 700 people in the senior class, and the senior class is here today. Some of our members, I met with a group that's sitting here on my two-line fishing bill. They've basically been assigned to build a track and meet with legislators and other things on it, plus visit the Capitol probably the first time since sixth grade, if ever, for some of them. So they're here sitting in the committee meetings and just getting the government experience. So it's good to have you folks here. And what you're seeing here is the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee. We oversee the budgets for Ag and Veterans Affairs, about $400 million worth. And today we're going to be hearing from the agriculture folks, Ag Marketing. They're the people that promote our Minnesota Grown and do a bunch of things to market and help our farmers and producers do that type of thing. We're going to get a report on ethanol plants from the department, and also talk about a new fund called the Ag 21 Fund. So that's the excitement for the day. So, and by the way, make sure your cell phones are off. We have a rule in here that if your cell phone goes off, you owe a dollar up there to the can, but for the coffee pot. And if you answer your cell phone, it's $5. So that's our rules. And you can help yourself to coffee. Anyone in the room that wants a cup, help yourself. With that, a little change in the agenda you see in your folder, members. We will be starting with Ag Marketing, but second then we'll have our ethanol plant report, and lastly we'll do the Ag 21 program. So we've switched the last two items around. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself. And by the way, I think we have the budget sheets here in front of us, the spreadsheets. Hopefully you folks have it at the table too, so when we get into lines you can point us to the budget book and or the spreadsheet pages that we're on. You're up.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and thank you, committee members. My name is Kurt Markham. I'm the Director of Marketing for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Our division is called AMS, or Ag Marketing Services. That's modeled after the federal AMS, or Ag Marketing Services, for USDA. I want to say first that marketing in government is really the facilitation for people in the state of Minnesota and our stakeholders that we do have. We have a very hard-working, creative staff, and I'll briefly discuss some of the activities, the FTEs, and our change items. First of all, the budget summary on page 45. If you look at the funding sources for Ag Marketing Services, about 45% of our funding is from general funds, about 45% is from dedicated accounts, and about 10% of our funding is from grants, federal and miscellaneous type grants. Salary represents about 62%, operating expenses about 34%. Our average salary cost is very similar to what Mr. Buzicki presented a week ago, and is up about 50% from where it was 10 years ago.
I'm not going to jump the gun, but I'm just asking you to tell us some of those other funding sources as you go through.
Yes, I will. The first activity, which is a funding source of about $95,000, is the commodity councils. We have oversight on 12 different commodity councils throughout the state. We provide contract oversight and manage their elections. We manage a licensing and bonding program, and this is to ensure persons who buy, store, and sell grain, wholesale produce, and livestock are licensed and bonded. This is one of the dedicated areas. It also includes an auditing and livestock weighing at a meat processing facility. Our Minnesota Grown program is an umbrella program. It unites the marketing efforts of producers' associations, different marketing groups, farmers markets, some organic people. And that program continues to grow at about 10% every year. We did receive additional funding last year, up to $186,000, and they do a great job of leveraging that money with these different groups. We have over 950 people that are producers who are registered to use that license, and about three-quarters of those are in this catalog. And I want to mention this website that we have for Minnesota Grown. It's the number one visited website for the Department of Agriculture, with over 1 million visits a year. Our next area is the market and business development area, probably the core service area. And this area helps to identify and expand markets for new and existing products, also deliver some of the business and marketing program services. This is the area where last year we reduced one FTE, and next year we'll be reducing another FTE in this area. Another area I wanted to mention was the global market. We work very closely with small to medium-sized companies to promote their products globally. Our focus is North America, Northeast Asia, and Southeast Asia. We leverage dollars with USDA to utilize the MAP, that's Market Access Program Funds, via federal cooperators. The department is a member of four different federal cooperators that we receive grants and leverage with. And they are Food Export Midwest, which is a group of 12 states, the U.S. Dairy Export Council, or USDEC, the U.S. Grain Council, which is corn and barley, and U.S. Meat Export, which is MEF for pork and beef products. These last three organizations, we receive funds to get through commodity organizations to pay our dues and also to assist with market development programs overseas. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about the FTEs that we have. We also have a PowerPoint, but we haven't quite tuned it in yet.
I think you can hit a zoom button right in front of you there to make that bigger on the screen.
Okay.
Or our pages can, there you go.
Okay, as far as ag marketing FTEs currently, we have the livestock program in Minnesota Grown, the global marketing. We have our administrative accounting or AFSME staff. We have the biofuels of three people right now, a director and an assistant director in management. The other is an economist that we use who does a number of reports, of which there will be a handout later to tie in with ethanol. She does the quarterly ethanol report. So the people here in St. Paul are a total of 32, but then there's the seven licensing areas. Well, we got it. And then five livestock weighers, which are in Worthington, some of which are part-time. So a total of 32 FTC staff in the ag marketing area. To expand a little bit more on the licenses, we have 529 livestock dealers, 114 wholesale produce, 411 warehouse companies. That location count used to be over 1,000, but it's been consolidated somewhat, so it's only about 900 now. The company count is very similar to what it was 5 to 6 years ago. 6 years ago is when we increased fees last in this area. And then we weigh 4.5 million head of livestock a year. Area I want to talk about a little bit is out-of-state travel. We were asked about this area. I took a look at the current biennium, the 20 months. We've had 10 staff take 51 trips. Those funds have been covered by a number of different sources. General fund and dedicated is very similar to what our revenue is, and the travel is also associated. Now, in the grants and dedicated, that includes the federal money we receive from the Foreign Agricultural Services, which manages the federal MAP cooperators. And then we have gifts or other, which would be from producer associations, of which there are four that have contributed in this biennium. So total for the year is $98,000. if you want a breakdown of the trips, about 11 of those trips were out of the country. Compared to the biennium...
Give us an idea what those trips are, just so people get a flavor. Trips for what?
Basically, they were all the different events, and I have a book of activities on every one, whether it was a trip to Taiwan to promote the food products in Taiwan, or a trip to Shanghai, China to promote our turkey products in Shanghai. The last trip that we were on was a trip to Vietnam to promote our soybean products. In North America, we traveled to the Caribbean, including Cuba, to promote our Minnesota products and our relationships there. And then there would be two trips to Canada. Essentially, the trips to Canada are to promote our grain products, specifically distillers, which we're well positioned to ship our distillers' grains to Canada. It's hard to ship our distillers' grains to Mexico over Iowa and Nebraska. So what we have done is tried to go north and west to the Asian Pacific.
And if you can give the committee a flavor of what those trips entail, North America and others, are you displaying at food shows or trade shows? Are you just going on meeting with government officials? Give the committee, we have a lot of new members here too, that just a flavor of what you're doing when you're traveling.
Okay. As far as what we try and do in promoting to international markets is basically find a new way to add value to our products, whether it is working with Hormel in Shanghai at a food show. Hormel has the coolers, they have the plants there. Our intent is to promote Jennie-O turkeys to that market. When we travel there, there's usually Steve Olson from the Minnesota Turkey Producers and also one of the executives from Hormel that does the selling of the Jennie-O turkeys, and sometimes a farmer that grows turkeys. That way they can explain to the end user, which is usually the large grocery stores in that market. Shanghai is a city of just 25 million people. It might be the size of a small country to some. But the purchasing power of the middle class there is phenomenal. So our intent is to promote Minnesota products and add value at those food shows that we have. And our focus is principally Northeast Asia, which I'll define as Korea, China, Taiwan, and Japan. The new markets that we're looking at is Southeast Asia, which is Vietnam, Indonesia, and Thailand. We do not have a focus because of lack of staff or money to promote to the Middle East, Europe, or Africa. There's not a lot of purchasing power in some of those markets. So our focus has been the Asian markets and the North American markets, the two people that we share a border with, Mexico and Canada.
Domestically, you go to shows. I saw you a couple of years ago when I was out at the International Dairy Expo at Madison. What were you doing there?
For the last 5 years, we have attended World Dairy Expo in Madison, Wisconsin. Our three core stakeholders at that show are Minnesota Milk, Land O'Lakes, and Dairy Herd Improvement Association. We've recently added Dairy Star to that list. But we have a double booth at the World Dairy Expo, which is really two shows. It's the largest producer dairy show in the country, and it's also a cow show. They have the Holstein, Jersey, Ayrshire shows that will vary by day. It's a 5-day show in Madison, Wisconsin that we have a number of people attend. And we're there to promote Minnesota and try and encourage a number of dairy farmers that might come there. Now, we have recruited some from the East and we have recruited some from Canada that basically find is attractive in Minnesota because of good land values and cheap feed costs that we have here.
And finally, from my perspective, I know you've had a presence at the Bio conference, Bio show, again, more of an international show. I actually went out and presented with you in San Diego last year. But give us, when was, there's a show coming to Illinois sometime in the future that I know you have your eye on to do a bigger Midwest presence. Can you remind us of when that is and when you might be focusing on that show?
Certainly. I want to back up to Chicago. A lot of food shows are in Chicago, and we do attend those. The Bio Show we started 5 years ago with the Governor's Biotechnology Initiative. That show moves around the country. It started in San Francisco, went to Philadelphia, was in Chicago. Last year it was in San Diego. This year it's in Atlanta, and next year in 2010 it is back in Chicago. But it's in Chicago, there's a definite focus on agriculture. And what we're trying to do there is promote the biotechnology, which is really the future of agriculture, as far as figuring out how to cost-effectively feed the world. About 200 Minnesota people do go to this bio show. It's a mixture of medical technology, medical devices, agricultural interests that are focused on renewable fuels. A number of different people go there. It's a large trade show and about 3 days of some rather sophisticated papers that are presented worldwide. There will be people from Europe, Asia, obviously the North American continent that will present their papers and shows. We work closely with DEED on this. DEED is really the lead at the bio show. They recruit the University of Minnesota, ourselves, Medtronic. Last year, Mayo participated in this show. So all of the companies work together. It is somewhat of a Minnesota networking, but also a national networking opportunity for people to attend.
And it is a good show, and hopefully next year some members can go. I know there were members. He mentioned the Rochester group. Rochester delegation was with them in San Diego also. I presented our biodiesel legislation, our B20 legislation at the Minnesota booth on the floor. Also there's a number of classes for those of you that go, or presentations. Just an example, I sat in last year in San Diego. At the time, I thought LG biodiesel from LG was being done in Minnesota. We toured the lab, and I didn't realize until I went to the presentation. That's when I found out there's 100 laboratories working on LG to biodiesel around the country, and we heard papers presented from that research. So there's some very timely and topical topics there, and Chicago will be no different. So hopefully we can figure out how to get some people there. Now that Southwest is going for $49 one way, I think it's gotten more reasonable even to travel to Chicago. So anyway, continue.
Okay. One of the things that I wanted to mention on, since a good share of our travel costs are associated with promoting Minnesota in the export market, is a little bit about the U.S. exports, and I have specifics on Minnesota exports and pork and dairy. We lag in getting some of the USDA numbers, but this was released at the Outlook seminar in Washington, D.C. last week. And I'll give you an idea of the national numbers and the Minnesota numbers. In 2007, The exports were a little over $85 million. Minnesota's share was $3.6 million. In 2008, we're going to go up about $2 billion in exports, principally because of an increase in price and also because more crops of ours were exported. The USDA number for 2008 will come in at about 115, maybe 116 billion. Minnesota's share, when it's published in June, will be about 5.8 billion. So that's up about $2 billion. Now, one might say, what's going to happen in 2009? It will be down, but we believe it'll still be above 2007, and we're still going to have a continued increase in export dollars. One of the brightest spots in Minnesota exports has been our soybean sales to China. China buys about half of the U.S. soybeans, and about 42% of Minnesota soybeans are exported directly to China, either through the Pacific Northwest or down through the Gulf.
Have you or your economist been tracking the whey market in China, too? We understand that's one of the problems right now with milk prices, is that protein market for whey. China was a big purchaser and have dropped back somewhat, but you expect them to come back on board. And First District, for example, that's their whole expansion project is based on the whey market.
Actually, the milk ingredient in market in China kind of had a scare right after the Olympics. we'll just call it a milk scare due to melamine issues. Their fluid milk market did not decline, but their ingredient market after the Olympics, people quit buying ingredients, including butter, due to the milk scare. That market is starting to come back now as people have more comfort with the U.S. standards. All of the China milk products going to, excuse me, all of the U.S. products of milk ingredients going to China go through a U.S. dairy export melamine check of less than 2.5 parts per million. So we do expect the dairy ingredient market to increase in China. We're not real sure about the cheese market. Actually, most of our cheese goes to Mexico. But the dairy ingredient market will go up in China. I can put more charts up, but perhaps there's other questions the committee may have.
Are you done with your presentation?
I want to cover the
I didn't think you were.
Reduction. The change item that we have.
What page are we on?
The change item that we have is the reduction of FTE in a business development program and also a reduction in promotional materials that we do have. The other change item that we have is
there the change pages in our book?
Karen, page 18 of your budget book?
The other change item would be the Ag 21, which Mr. Zimmerman will talk about later.
So talk about the 18, the Ag Marketing Development change item right now. Looks like a $97,000.
Yes, the 97, there's a $10,000 in reduction of promotional materials and then a reduction in one FTE in the business development area.
And what did that FTE do?
That was in the aquaculture program.
Okay, so we're not going to be working with the aquaculture folks at this point. What basis of that decision?
The basis of that decision is over a number of years. A lot of the aquaculture business has moved to the south where it's a little warmer. There are some unique niches in Minnesota in aquaculture, but essentially states such as Texas and Louisiana are much more cost effective with the aquaculture business. There also is a wild fish sensitivity issue that is probably better suited to DNR handling.
Is that an open seat, or is that something, or open position, or is that something where someone will be laid on?
That will be a reduction in an FTE.
Okay. I don't know where you're going, but I want to talk about Minnesota Grown also. Last year you got, I believe, $50,000, I'm trying to think now, $50,000 bump in Minnesota Grown to promote locally grown products in grocery stores. Now, again, these are just my observations. I know you were in grocery stores in the Twin Cities. I don't believe you were in grocery stores in rural Minnesota, especially at least in the Chairstown, because I visited Cub Foods, for example, personally. They invited me to their store last fall, and we talked about the Minnesota products in there, which, by the way, amazed me that Cub Foods did have sweet corn from just outside of Wilmer, and they had a number of Minnesota-grown products. All their promotional activities, though, were done in-house in that store without any assistance or backup or charts or signage or anything else from Minnesota-grown programming or the Department of Agriculture. And they suspected you had been working somewhat with the stores in the Twin Cities and the folks, but again, I will reiterate at least my opinion, is that we can do much more with that program. That when folks go in a grocery store, whether it's in the Twin Cities or outstate Minnesota, if they would see Minnesota Grown sticking out on the honey jars on the shelf or on the, name the product, even in the milk cases, they're more likely to buy that product. Pork is a good one.
And I believe more likely to pay a premium for buying that local product. And so have you thought through how we can work on expanding that program, expanding our visibility, particularly in grocery stores and retail outlets, and again, someday see signs that don't just say low fat or low carb or fat free sticking out in every aisle, but that we also see the Minnesota Grown logo sticking out in those aisles and drawing people to those products?
Mr. Chairman, I prefer to have Doug Spanier, supervisor of that program, respond.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doug Spanier. I'm the assistant director of the marketing division. And I had our Minnesota Grown guys put a summary together of how of what we've done in the past year and what we're planning on doing with the additional money. There have been three areas where we talked about where we could expand when we got this increase in money. One was in the expanding non-metro advertising. We have done that with we spent $20,000 in calendar year 2008 in places in advertising in places we hadn't advertised in the past. Minnesota Public Radio across the state, KTTC TV in Rochester, and WXOW TV in La Crescent. We will expanding further this next year. And part of also going out to Greater Minnesota will be doing more this next year as opposed to this in 2008, only because it took a little while to get further out. But we spent $20,000 on expanding in the non-metro on the rate on TV and radio. We also started a partnering program with media vendors to distribute directories. In 2008, we worked with radio station KAXE in Brainerd, Grand Rapids, and Bemidji. And we're also going to be sponsoring or working with Pioneer Public Television in Appleton, KPTC in Rochester, and 98 Country Radio in St. Cloud. And what we do with that is in exchange for putting together 5,000 custom directories with their logo on the cover, their ads on the cover pages, and the rest of the directories the same, they can distribute those. In exchange, we get free advertising on their radio stations. So it's a partnership. We've done one, we did one in the Brainerd, Grand Rapids, the Bemidji area to see how that worked. And now I know this next year we're going to be working with these other three in Appleton, Rochester, and St. Cloud. That accomplishes two things. One, we get our greater advertising out in Greater Minnesota, and two, we expand the distribution of our directories. Our cash cost for that is roughly $3,000 a location to do that. We also, the other increase area would be marketing targeted to grocery stores, restaurants, and retail food establishments. We are working with farmers to conduct in-store sampling. We pay half the cost of this. Example, Bushel Boy will be sampling their live lettuce product in cup stores later this spring, and we're working with other farmers to sign them up as we get closer to spring and summer. We're sponsoring some merchandising contests and provides incentives for individual store managers to produce carry and feature Minnesota grown products. We tested this out in Cub Foods last year during apple season, and we'll be offering it to all major chains in Minnesota as we get closer to the marketing season. And then for the past 2 years, we funded the Farmer Chef networking sessions. They introduce local farmers with the chefs and restaurants. We've done one session a year in the metro area, and we've also held them in Bemidji, Little Falls, Winona, and Lanesboro. And then the third area that we've used the money for is improving marketing materials. These materials will be free to members, twist ties, pricing stickers, new cards that say Products of USA on this, a new Minnesota Grown logo for producers in the North Central Pioneer Lakes country, and the directory cover is now thicker and glossier than it was in the past, and we've also increased the number of directories to 185, that we printed to 185,000.
And the reason I'm asking so many questions about this is because I think we all understand, at least I understand, that there's no good company without a good sales department. Of course, I used to be in sales for the Howe Fertilizer Company, so I get that better than anything. You're our sales department, the marketing
and Minnesota Grohmann and other things that come under marketing. And so I'm anxious to see what we can do if we're prioritizing within budgets. You know, one of my priority suggestions would be to continue focusing on ag marketing and enhancing. Our farmer markets, I've noticed, have exploded. You can't hardly find a parking spot in Wilmer on Saturday mornings. They've opened another farmer's market on Thursday afternoons, and they are wall-to-wall people from 6 in the morning till noon, which is amazing to me. I'm going to get to the directories in a minute, which are very good. By the way, I know Representative Shemansky participates himself in the Minnesota Grown program. But I guess I'm looking for, you know, again, the grocery stores, I think, are a huge area. And I like what you said about sampling local foods. We should have an expansion of that. We should see a lot of that out there. Again, the signage and other things should become available. Working with Super Value here in the Twin Cities, you don't have to drive far, but get those packets to go out to the local stores around the state when they're shipping their trucks out and working with them. One of the other things you've done very well, and I guess I just have a question if you've ever thought about it, is probably where I see the most people in a year is at our county fairs. And I think rural members will attest to that. Almost seems like everyone in the county walks through there one of those 3 or 4 days. You've got a wonderful display at the Minnesota State Fair on Minnesota-grown products. You line your grocery shelves with them. I've been through there many times, and it's even products people don't think about. You mentioned Jennie-O earlier. I mean, our turkey products or Spam from Hormel, or all the little Bushel Boy and all the other things that come with it. Have you ever thought about putting together one or two or three traveling displays like that to plug into our county fairs and advertise Minnesota Grown? You probably haven't. I'm just throwing
Mr. Chair, we have selected some of the other Twin City events, such as some of the events in the spring, the recent food and wine show, to display some of the Minnesota Grown products. We use volunteers at the State Fair, and it's hard to schedule the volunteers over a 10-day period for that, but if there were volunteers in a county that would be willing to assist and run those, then it would be fairly easy to do. But the volunteers are the key, or the staffing, to those displays, whether it's a fair or whether it's a spring show or a winter show.
And again, I'm just throwing ideas. I think what we want to hear are new ideas and fresh things coming too that can generate business. You know, maybe you hook up with our local FFA chapters or 4-H or someone who would be very willing to, I think, and get a youth involved with. I mean, there's a lot of ideas. That's not going to be in our bill or anything, but I think we're anxious to hear new ideas coming out of your department on how we can do even more across the state for Minnesota Grown, not just in the metro area. The directories and the Minnesota Grown, now last year, if I remember right, we increased the Minnesota Grown fee that was requested by their board. It went from what to what now? Remind the committee of that.
Mr. Chair, it went from $5 to $20.
$5 to $20 a year, and that mainly goes to printing those directories and those type of activities. What's that used for?
Mr. Chair, it's used for the promotional activities.
Okay.
A lot of the stickers, part of the, not a lot of the catalog. A lot of the catalog will come from the advertising within the catalog.
And those directories get out. They're at our tourist points around the state, information centers, chambers of commerce. Where do they end up? Give us just a little.
Mr. Chair, they'll publish those in the spring, and they're actively shipped and distributed this spring out to a number of locations around the state. We give about 20,000 away at the Minnesota State Fair in August. That's probably the biggest single event where we hand these out. So essentially anybody that wants a box of 50 can call us, and we'll ship that box of 50 UPS or Speedy out to the location that they desire.
That
we've been fairly constant at between 180,000 catalogs that are printed every spring.
We should have those in our office as members too. Representative Shemansky, Minnesota Grown. $20 contributor.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like your comments on what you think about the program, how it's going, any improvements you think we could work on, and how's that $20 fee? Is that right? Too much? Too little? Is there room to do more or less?
You want me to answer all those questions?
All of them.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, you can find the directory at my office.
Okay.
They're always available there. And I thank the department for sending the cases over to me every spring. So that the email goes out to the staff and members that the directories are available. And the $20 fee, I think, is very workable. If a member of Minnesota Grown uses the programs that are available, you get many times over the value of your $20 membership in Minnesota Grown. But I did want to comment on the directory. I appreciate the improvements. 2 years ago, I was asking for an improved cover on the Minnesota Grown directory, and I'm glad to see it's there. If I had my way, we'd probably have it in a hardcover book, but but I think that you've made great strides on that. But the other thing that I wanted to comment on, Mr. Chair, is that you talked about the presence in the grocery stores and so forth, and the Minnesota Grown is more than the fruits and vegetables, but I think we also need to emphasize more our processed food products, the cheeses, the meat products, the canned vegetables coming out of Seneca Foods in my district in Glencoe. If we had a little indication on the label that it's a product of Minnesota, I think it would be, help consumers to realize that a lot of their food is coming from right here in Minnesota. And so I would ask that, some consideration be given to that. It irks me a little bit when I see the TV commercials for California cheese playing in the metro area here. So I think if we promote our own products, not again just the fruits and vegetables, but, everything that we make, for our food chain here in Minnesota, I think we should be promoting it more.
I share that vision. That's why I keep bringing it up, and I'm going to keep bringing it up until Szymanski and I and others start seeing signage in our stores, even on the processed products, I think, are more important because they're competing. We know a lot of the fresh products come from our area when they're in season, and those are literally hand-labeled. Sweet corn from south of Wilmer, I see that in the Cub Food Store. But shells and grain belts should be labeled as Minnesota Grown. People don't understand that Grain Belt is made in New Ulm, at a union plant, by the way, in New Ulm. And so, there's so much we can do to promote Minnesota agriculture products that I don't think we're even thinking about. But Representative Szymanski is exactly right, that we should see more on the process side, too, so we promote our Minnesota companies who hire our Minnesota people, as opposed to nothing wrong with the other states, but I'd rather eat Minnesota potatoes than Idaho potatoes any day. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, last year when we had the discussion over the dollars that were going to go to the Minnesota Grown program, I think Chair Junkie was pretty clear in that it was intended to go towards the grocery stores and increasing the visibility in the grocery stores. And so my question to you is, I understand where you put the dollars with radio and TV, but is there a reason why you didn't put more in the grocery stores? Are your marketing analysts or your studies showing that if we put more signage at the actual location of where the product is in the grocery store, that it's not actually going to lead to increased sales? Or what is your reasoning for not moving forward in the grocery stores as what, I guess that's my question.
The chair, Representative. I don't think it's a problem with that. I think it was just a matter of prioritizing. We're trying to get the most advertising out as we could in Greater Minnesota right now. You will see more in this next year as we get more develop more of the relationships between the grocery stores and the producers. But we wanted to get we got the radio station, we got the Greater Minnesota stuff out there now. We will continue to do more in this next year.
Representative Welty.
Okay, thank you. Representative Welty, also, this last year we were able to leverage some of the Minnesota Grown dollars with the U.S. Specialty Crop Program, and some of those funds will also assist the Minnesota Grown program in getting out to different parts of Minnesota.
Representative Welty.
You know, those of us around the table that have to buy radio ads for our campaign, we sometimes know the numbers. You know, you have to have 7 radio ads, or a person has to hear something 7 times, or maybe it's 5 times. I don't know the exact number. I have to go back and look. But you have to hear it so many times in order for it to really take effect and be effective. And, you know, I know you're buying TV time and radio time in these different markets. And I'm just wondering if that's, for the dollars that we're spending in those areas, if it would be more effective to actually be putting signage in the grocery store so that every single week when a person goes into the grocery store, they see the sign, they start picking up that some of these products are from Minnesota, rather than an approach where we just buy radio ads or TV ads during the season or whenever it might occur, but there's less actual impact with the consumer. I'm just wondering if you can comment on that. What are you using as a basis for making the decisions that you're making with the dollars that you're using?
Mr. Spanier, you notice this committee is the least free market committee in the state, so we're protectionists all the way.
Mr. Chair, I don't know specifically why we haven't got the signage in there. I do know part of the reason is because of the time and the expense of trying to get all of it. We focused on getting out the partnership areas to the radio stations and to get to out there. I can check and find out from our Minnesota Grown guy from exactly why there is no signage in certain grocery stores. But I do know he, right before I left coming out here, he did say there's a lot more planned for this next year with the funds than could get done with the first year.
And I do know, and I'll call on you again, I do know, because I've had Super Valley and some of these folks in my office, that they're waiting and willing to go at it, because I asked them about it too, and they said, oh, we'd be more than willing. Even Walmart, they're getting stores in all of our areas, and their lobbyists told me that they're more than happy to try and promote Minnesota products in their Minnesota stores whenever they can. If that helps the community, helps the state, they're on this big push to redo their image out there too, and they're more than willing to work with that. So I just, we're all happy to help meet with you and the marketers and the lobbyists too if you're having a problem getting in their door, because that's not what they're telling us. Representative Wilson.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, and Tessar, just one last point I want to make on that is, if you do the radio advertisements, you do the TV, you do your other marketing, but when a person walks in the grocery store, if they have no connection between your message that you have out there and the product that's on the shelf, and they don't know that it's Minnesota grown, then what is the, where's the connection, or where's the disconnect? That's what I'm trying to get at. I just don't know if the dollars are being used very wisely in the marketing program that you've set up. I guess I'll just leave it at that. I appreciate the effort and what you've done, but the intent, I think, of the committee and Representative Chairman Junkie last year was that we were supposed to be getting more advertising in the grocery stores. That's what I understood. And evidently that's not really been happening, I think, in the way that we intended, so maybe we're going to have that meeting. But I still think that there is a disconnect. When somebody walks into the grocery store, they don't necessarily know what product is from Minnesota and what is not.
Absolutely. Even sugar products. You know, you think about everything on the shelf, you know, sugar from the Red River Valley or from the southern Minnesota, actually it's Red River Valley, because we put ours in bigger bags. And what we're asking you, I think you're getting a sense, is what kind of resources do you need in the next 2 years too? You know, we're not doing this in a vacuum, or you're not doing it in a vacuum. We're trying to understand what we need to do to accomplish some of these things. Representative Szymanski and then Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, you know, when you mentioned that the retailers are ready, willing, and able to participate, I'm going to ask the department to consider possibly some workshops or short courses for growers, because a lot of the growers start small and you know, progress slowly, like myself in particular. I've had the opportunity to sell wholesale to the grocers, but I just don't have the background, if you will. What are the wholesalers needing? You know, what kind of supply line, reliability, I think, is a big issue. Because as a farmer, you don't know exactly how good your crop is going to be, whether you can deliver it on time. So I think if we can do some short course type of program with the growers to help them take advantage of the wholesale opportunities, it may be helpful.
Mr. Sheriff and Schmansky. I do know there are a couple conferences each year with the annual conferences where we do bring in speakers to educate members on how to direct market in certain areas. I know the whole agritourism issue and how to bring in more people, how to bring in more money into people to do some of those projects too.
Representative Schmansky.
Well, thank you, Mr. Spanier. And if, what I'm looking at is more so if you can do a program that would bring in some wholesale buyers that say, this is what we need from a producer to have a reliable supply chain.
Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to follow up on what Representative Welty had to say. And I hope that you've got people in your department that know more about marketing than either I or Representative Welty do. But it seems to me that $3,000 is what you mentioned when you're going into an area and buying radio ads or TV ads. $3,000 doesn't get you very far. But it seems to me $3,000 worth of little signs inside a store saying Minnesota Grown would have a huge, or at least a lot more impact than $3,000 worth of radio ads in a market. So I guess I'm agreeing with Representative Welty and, again, saying that I hope you guys know more about it than I do.
Do you have a question? Representative Anderson, were you stretching over there? Did you have your hand up?
Well, I did, but it's not directly on this topic. Okay. My question, Mr. Chairman, goes back to, it was mentioned about the bonding program that your department did. And my comment or question is, ethanol plants, all the corn they buy from farmers, and thinking back to that Verizon debacle down in Iowa, can ethanol plants be bonded to protect the farmers who sell them corn?
The chair committee members, yes, they are. In fact, the two plants that Verizon had here in Minnesota were licensed and bonded here.
And we're going to have the ethanol report here just shortly, so we'll get the right people up to the table. Is that what you're ready to do now? This is kind of your show, so we're looking to you, what you're doing next year. Ms. McGinney? Any other questions for these folks before they leave? Otherwise, we're Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess we haven't really touched on, but would this fall into would the testifiers have knowledge expertise on the checkoff monies? Would that kind of be your areas?
Tell us the commodity groups you're overseeing, the monies, and who you're doing checkoffs for. They are the right people, but maybe you can expand for the crew here.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we have oversight of 12 commodity councils. It's a mixture of livestock, the dairy, beef, and mostly crop from corn, soybeans, potatoes, edible beans, those councils. The one council that we don't oversee is the pork. That's a federal checkoff. Three of the councils have federal checkoffs. Those are dairy, beef, and soybeans, so they conform not only to the federal rules, but also the state rules. The other councils conform to the state statutes and rules that we do have. We don't actually collect the money. They collect the money. We administer some of the refunds for three or four councils. Some councils have refunds, edible beans, turkey, corn. We'll administer that. We oversee their contracts. Total revenue that we have from those contracts for those 12 councils is about $95,000 a year and employs a little over one FTE at the department.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just had some farmers express some concerns about maybe the way some of the most recent checkoff programs have been administered, about increasing fees or things, and was hoping if you could comment about that, if you think that there's been some problems with the administration about actually getting enough input from farmers, or I just got the understanding that they haven't been as happy with the most recent way that voting was handled.
And yeah, I was going to say, along with that, the voting, haven't you been working with different opportunities to vote, whether it's by mail or whether it's by FSA office, or whether it's you're exploring different ways to have more folks have the opportunity to vote on these things?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'll elaborate on that. Over the last 5 years, we have had 8 different referendums on changes in the rates. Some have been by mail ballot, some have been by polling location. Probably the most pushback that the department received was last winter during the wheat election. The wheat election chose to have their hearings during harvest time, so not a lot of people could go to the hearings. And then the election was held at their annual meeting, which unfortunately was in Grand Forks, North Dakota. That referendum did fail. They will probably have to wait 1 year before they can do it again. And I think they will improve their advertising on that weed election before it's run again, and may look at other options, including a mail ballot. What we have found in the past is mail ballots, we don't get a high rate of return. Even the federal, when they looked at the pork checkoff nationally, they only got 95 ballots back, so they didn't do it again. So the polling locations usually get a higher percentage of farmers who vote, but unfortunately the distance to drive to the polling location seems to come up as an impediment, probably more so with the no votes than the yes votes. So that's the situation we're looking at improving the rules on. An idea that we have had is to use the internet so people could download, and yet we would be able to certify that they are able to vote. That the internet is used in elections in some other areas of government, so we're pursuing that option. The nice thing about the internet is you can track it to the IP address, so to make sure people don't do multiple votes from one IP address. But you still would have to certify that the person is eligible to vote.
Okay. All right, let's morph into ethanol here.
I briefly want to talk about this ethanol market news that we've published for about 8 years. We published it quarterly. This has been brought to the attention of the committee. Ms. Cheney has this as a handout. We have the history of ethanol prices since 2000. I will mention that the ethanol industry, we track the profitability by using Pro Exporter. It's a Kansas City firm that looks at the averages. The average profitability for a normal run ethanol plant with average debt load has been break even between red and black for about the last 5 months. Some of the newer plants with higher debt loads are obviously in the red. Some of the older plants with lower debt loads would be in the black. But if you did a P&L comparison right now with today's ethanol price of a little over $1.76 a gallon and $3 corn, that ethanol plant would be right on the red-black bubble. And with that, I'll let Steve Ernest.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Ernest, Financial Management Director at the Department of Agriculture. The ethanol appropriation for the producer payment starts on page 52 of the budget book. This describes our bioenergy program. On page 54 are the numbers. You'll see in fiscal year 2008, $19.3 million. That is made up of $15.168 for the ethanol producer payments, and then the $3 million for the NextGen grants that we did this year, and then $1.2 million for NextGen projects that were spelled out in the law. It wasn't my purpose today to go over the NextGen projects. I think we have a report and a whole separate presentation on that, but I wanted to give you an update on the producer payments program, and so I have a handout that looks like this that you probably have seen before.
And to members, 2 years ago, before we had the NextGen Energy Board, we actually appropriated money for some energy projects. We have gotten, or we're getting reports back in AJ's office, and probably after deadline, we'll have a committee hearing on hearing those reports and what those energy projects are accomplishing or where our money went, because we do want to have that follow-up with those folks, and we wrote that right into statute that they had to report back to us. So that's a future meeting, probably after our deadline. Back to you and your handout.
Mr. Chairman, if you look in the middle of the chart on the top there, 2008 and 2009 is our current biennium. $15.168 million was appropriated for the producer payments each year, but we did have a reduction of $300,000 last year, $10,000, I think it was last year, or for fiscal year 9, that was made in the bill last year. So we dipped down slightly for this year. But the base will remain the same for this appropriation of 15.168. You'll see in 2008, we used almost all the 15.168 million for the regular payments, current production payments. We had just $45,000 left over to use for deficiency payments. This year, we expect it to be about half and half. Once we're done, $7.35 million for regular payments and $7.5 million for deficiency. The fourth quarter reports get to us after the fiscal year ends, and then once we pay the fourth quarter regular payments, we see what we have left over and send that out pro rata based on our calculations of the amounts we didn't pay when we were paying 17 cents a gallon instead of 20 cents a gallon. For 2010 and 2011, we only show regular payments in the first year because by statute that is the last year of the program. For the regular payments, we anticipate there will be two plants receiving regular payments in that year, and then we have 11 plants that will be still receiving the deficiency payments until we're done with them. The budget book says 12 plants. We did have one plant since Gopher State, so now we have two plants that became ineligible for deficiency payments because they're no longer producing, and that was Melrose Dairy Protein. They were a smaller producer.
By the way, to that point, and I should have had Colby bring that. I was going to make copies. Last year, if you remember, we put together legislation that disqualified Gopher State from collecting producer payments anymore since they were our St. Paul plant and they're not producing ethanol. We're actually sending them a check. They did take us to court on that legislation, and we won. The other day, the court ruled that we were totally within our means here as a legislative body to require you to actually produce ethanol to get a producer payment. And so we won that, and Colby's got copies if anyone needs to see that of that decision and the court as it came down here a couple weeks ago. So that was good news. We did a good thing here, I think, and progressed. What are the two plants that are still in 2010 getting regular payments?
Diversified Energy, Denco in Morris, and Minnesota Energy in Buffalo Lake. Are those two.
Okay.
And then, Mr. Chairman, looking forward to the next biennium, the tails 2012 and 2013, we anticipate at this point that we'll need $13.79 million to finish the deficiency payments in 12. So the $50 million will be, we'll have $1.3 million, $37 million left over for other payments. The way that, for other programs, the way that's structured right now is the statute says that the appropriation can be used for other value-added types of programs. We envisioned that we would have other needs but didn't get too specific because we knew it was a ways out. But these numbers, 1.377 and 15.168, then now are tying in with our Ag 21 initiative. We envisioned that we would combine those in with that program and provide more specifics on what we would use that money for. And so the next item would be the Ag 21 initiative.
Before you get to Ag 21, in fact, let's stay on ethanol for a while. Do you get a report every year? Don't you get a report on the health of our ethanol plants, fiscal information and those types of things? And doesn't that get put together in March here now?
Mr. Chairman, the statute requires that any plant receiving payments in any year, whether it's regular or deficiency payments, has to send us a report on their ownership. They have to tell us if they've changed ownership more than 5% over the year, and they have to give us a copy of their audited financial statements. We then combine the audited financial statements into one report. Since the plants are of various sizes and operations, it takes a little while, and I'm sorry to say I did let you know that report is coming soon. Combining financial statements is a little tricky. We try to be true to the way they're reported, but we are not allowed to report any individual information on any individual plant that is kept private.
How many plants are getting payments today?
Mr. Chairman, 11 plants.
11 plants out of how many are in the state operating?
Mr. Chairman, someone else might...
18? Is it?
That sounds correct.
Something like that. Okay. So 11 plants still getting payments. Out of those 11 plants that are still, and I realize you can't name them by name, and I don't know if you've seen them all this year, but based on last year's, how many of those 11 plants would you suggest are in good financial shape? And members, the reason I'm asking these questions, and we should be asking these questions, is, as you know, that $15 million you're looking at here is a big target in our budget. And it's something that bipartisanly we're going to have to talk about, and this committee decide over these next number of years what do we do with that. If there's reductions that have to be made, I think it behooves us to understand the health of these plants, at least internally, and what are the consequences if there's reductions or if this program goes away, so we can talk intelligently with our colleagues on it. And then also, obviously, when we get to the Ag 21, what you're seeing, a review real quick, we were at what, about at one point $30 million a year when we started these payments. So plants were guaranteed a payment of 20 cents a gallon up to 15 million gallons for 10 years. And that equated at full throttle at about $30 million a year. And now you can see we came down, we're at $15 million. What we did with legislation was lock in that $15 million into our base. So now what you see in the future is as these plants come off, this Ag Committee wisely locked this into the base, and now we have that to utilize into the future for our next value-added projects, whether it's livestock investment grants or next-gen energy projects or producer payments for cellulosic ethanol, or you can imagine what we might utilize this for. And so I think our charge is twofold. Number one, understanding how we defend the ethanol payments if we have to, and or if we don't, the consequences of that money then I think will get stretched out more into the future before we can utilize it, because I think we will pay the deficiency payments eventually. And number two, keeping that in our base into the future. Even if there's, and again, these are fiscal things we have to think about as we do our budgets. Even if there's a cut, let's say that $15 million gets reduced to $5 million, for an example, this year. What we want to make sure is we're doing one-time cuts and that it shows up in our base, again, out into the future. If you do permanent cuts, then we start losing that $15 million. And I think we can all surmise the difficulty it would be to get a pot of economic development money like that over to this committee again with the political realities in the legislature. We're losing numbers. We're losing a voice out there. So we need to think through all this, members, and try and establish in the next month a plan for this pot and others. So can you give us, without naming plants, you actually look at the health. How is the health of our plants? And I know we've got larger plants that have expanded to 50, 75 million gallons. So, I mean, this is a small piece of their overall production that they're still getting a payment on. But we do have smaller plants, too, that I think we're always more dependent on these payments now and into the future. Can you give us some, what are those spreadsheets and reports looking like?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think as Mr. Markham said, many plants are in the red or black at the end of any quarter, depending on how that quarter went. I have kind of heard that, looking at the statements we've got, some of our plants are doing maybe better than the average because of the fact that we've helped them over the years with the Department of Agriculture with these producer payments. One plant that is still producing did temporarily stop production just a couple weeks ago, and they characterized it, or the paper said that the quote was that when the economics improve, I think maybe they're thinking spring, summer, fall type time frame they would start up again. But as you said, it's a real mixed bag.
Are plants now, are they upside down? Give us a sense of why the profits aren't there. Is it contracts they have out there? They've contracted for $5 and $6 corn when cash corn now is closer to $3. Do you or your economists or others have an opinion on that? Are you tracking ethanol? I see you put together the nice sheet. I like that, but we should be able to give some information on things like how much of our ethanol markets that we produce goes into our 10% and then soon to be 15 or 20% mandate. Do we keep our plants healthy just by that mandate alone? What's the reason that ethanol is selling for the exact same price as unleaded gas in most of our districts today within a dime, one way or another, when usually it's been a 40 or 50% difference in ethanol prices? I mean, and again, we can have the ethanol plants in here to do it too, but I guess I'm putting you on the spot because you're here and you're supposed to be overseeing these plants too.
Mr. Chairman, I am not an expert on the markets. As you said, it is a mix of corn prices or input prices versus sales price of the product. And as I said, one plant with our payment still decided that they were at the margin and they would just take a break for a little while, hope the markets improve. I believe there may be someone else in our agency that might be able to speak to the markets a little better, the people who are working especially now on the next gen type of project that we didn't have come in today.
Is that plant that is discontinuing, and do they get producer payments then if they don't produce, just like Gopher State?
The producer payments are for, the regular payments are for production if they produce. I think this quarter they'll have a partial quarter. And then, if they stop producing, they will not be eligible for the deficiency payments anymore.
Well, and members, we will have the plants in, or the there's a couple different groups that are lobbied down here. Jerry Steck has one of the groups, and Valerie Jarrett lobbies for the other group, and we'll make sure they're before this committee before we put our budgets together. Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you just give me a ballpark? What percentage of the corn produced in Minnesota ends up going through an ethanol plant?
I'm sorry, I wouldn't have that information.
Ms. Cheney, do you have any experts in the department on ethanol that can answer some of those questions?
Mr. Chair, unfortunately, Mr. Markham he left, so we are not able to have, he's no longer here to answer those questions. What I can tell you is that I know that when we were talking about the 20% mandate, that we've discussed ethanol quite a bit and how much is grown in Minnesota, and we do produce far more than would be necessary for that mandate in the state of Minnesota. We also, however, we don't measure how much is going, we don't track it in a way to say that it's how much of it is actually used within the state because of the way the sales of the corn.
And I know the corn growers can give us that information too. One of the other important, I think, principles for this committee as we move forward is whenever we cut off payments to a program we've set up, whether it's ethanol or Job Z, Representative Magnus carried that bill, or other things, I think we as a state have an obligation to fulfill that contract. I realize we change budgets and can do anything every year we're here, change law. But even as I heard the discussion, you know, there's those that don't like the Job Z program and think it should stop. But even those people that say the Job Z program should stop has never once said that we shouldn't keep all those people that are on Job Z up to this point whole through that 8 or 7 or 10 or 12 year whenever they signed up and give them those tax breaks and everything else. So no one has ever mentioned that, frankly, except for ethanol. And it comes up all the time that for some reason ethanol is a different government program, and once we've made a commitment, we should just stop and forget about it. Now, we've done a good job it's hurt us, frankly, in the long run, because these deficiency payments now are utilizing dollars that we had hoped to utilize somewhere else. But I think we have the obligation, no matter how far out in the future it goes, to make those deficiency payments until these plants fulfill that contract that we promised them. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. Many of the investors or the owners built those into their business models, and so it's extremely important. They're relying on those. Back to the department, we need to fully understand the health of the industry, because like Chair Junkie said and others have said, that these payments are a target. And if we don't fully understand, there are accusations being made that the ethanol industry has been and is extremely healthy and making money. And so people are looking at to end those payments and reinvest that money somewhere else, and it's not in agriculture. That threat is very real. We need to fully understand the health of the industry. It'd be beneficial to understand cost of production, break-evens, and the whole works. So we can talk and subsequently defend the industry and the producer payments.
So we are hoping to get that information. Again, we're planning, tentatively planning on having our bill out of here by Easter break, which would be April 8th. That'll be earlier than any other finance bill if we can get our targets and get our work done, which means we'll be putting, Colby will be frantically writing upstairs and others by the end of March. I'm telling people we need to have language and some decisions to Colby probably by March 31st. Give him a week or so to prepare language, hopefully introduce a bill then on April 7th, so we can all look at it, and then April 8th, mark it up, and get it out of here if we can. So we've got less than a month to get a lot of information, including ethanol plant health information, which I'm sure will be a point of discussion in our budget. So we're just asking for your help to come forward, hopefully based on the new reports you're going to get this by this month that you've probably already gotten, but to at least compile. Again, we won't publicly talk plant by plant here unless they want to voluntarily do it the day they're in. But we need to get an idea that, if we don't send producer payments out to three of our plants, they risk going upside down and laying off 35 people in that community and whatever. So we really need to understand that as we move forward. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. From people I've talked with unofficially back home, right now, there's not a single plant in the state that's profitable. They are all in the red right now. It is not a profitable time because of low oil prices and relatively high corn prices, but they are not making money now.
And we understand that, but we do know that some plants have done a good job the last few years of paying down debt. They're relatively debt-free, and they have reserves, or they have, their boards. There's some good boards out there that have looked forward, and they'll probably be healthy for a number of years, even being upside down in the market because of byproducts and other things that come out of there, too. But there are some plants that maybe didn't make as wise a decision to not pay down debt when they had the opportunity, and now are risking temporarily shutting down. Mr. Zimmerman came to the table.
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to provide some additional information both on the health of the plant from the information we have available to us, as well as on the industry as a whole. And I apologize for not having our specialist available today.
Yes.
I have brought Kurt Zimmerman down to the stand also because I know you wanted to talk about Ag 21. So
and members, again, Ag 21, I'll give a little introduction before Mr. Zimmerman. That's the program we're setting up to capture these ethanol producer payments into the future in our base. Again, I'm going to challenge everyone in this committee to help me, and Ms. Cheney and Mr. Zimmerman and others, think of another name. Ag 21 is great, but I will guarantee you that anything that says money is going to agriculture in years future will always be a target. Can we name it Next Generation, Rural Economic Development Fund? Or can we think of an acronym? Can we think of something else so it doesn't have the word agriculture in it? Because, frankly, some of these things, while will be related to agriculture, they're more rural development, rural economic development. It will give us more broad use of those dollars, I think, in this committee if we take that name out, and it gets the target off it. So I've been driving back and forth since you introduced the budget and thinking about that, and I haven't come up with a name yet. You know, the Vickerman Junkie Fund I like a lot, but there's only two of us in the legislature like that one. So maybe you all can help us think of a name in the next month before we put our bill out that we can name this, and you'll win some kind of prize. Mr. Zimmerman.
Chairman Junkie and members of the committee, my name is Kurt Zimmerman. I'm the Livestock Development Supervisor for the Department of Agriculture. I work in ag marketing. On behalf of those involved in livestock, I want to thank you for your support of animal agriculture. I have to comment on a couple of issues that I was listening to prior. One is on Minnesota Grown. I took a phone call just before the meeting today from a cattle producer by Hoffman. He wanted information on selling direct. The school district apparently is interested in buying local food safety, wants to do more business with people in the community, wanted to know how he goes about selling direct. And I referred him to the Minnesota Grown Directory, and I can't think of a better resource, piece of resource information of all of the people that have done this and how to do it correctly, learning from others' mistakes. It's an absolutely wonderful resource. Marketing tool for the people in livestock that I'm involved in. I've used it 3 times in the last 2 weeks for people that want to market their own products. So not all of it goes through the grocery store. Many of it goes direct through the directory. Ag 21 and Chairman Junkie, you summarized the need far better than I. I can just hit some of the high points. I did experience, a flavor for one of the two primary aspects that Ag 21 represents, and Ag 21 represents a very long name currently. It's 21st Century Agricultural Reinvestment Program.
And members, he's got a sheet for us, but it's also on page 10, that change item in your booklet, page 10.
I think the key is that this is a reinvestment program. We're trying to assist people that are reinvesting in Minnesota agriculture. It's in primarily providing grants and loans in two primary areas. One is through the Livestock Investment Grant Program that I was the supervisor for in the Ag Marketing Division this past year, and also through the bioenergy products through the NextGen Energy Plant. Two of your members on the committee serve on that NextGen board. Both of these programs, the Livestock Investment Grant Program and the bioenergy, the Next Gen Energy Grant Program, were funded on a one-time basis this past year. Ag 21 combines the programs for the short term. And what I mean by that is that in years 2010 and 2011, funds are going to be redirected or proposed to be directed from the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. This program is one that we've been working with since 1996, redirecting a portion of these dairy development funds for the short term, 2010 and 2011, will show some continued support for animal agriculture. Just a quick point, two-thirds of the livestock investment grant participants this past year were dairy producers. So although some of the funds are being redirected from dairy into this livestock investment grant program funding for the near term, two-thirds of the participants this past year were people involved in the dairy industry, and we can talk a little bit about the various aspects of that investment grant program. Again, we were funded with $1 million appropriation with your support this past year. That covered 10% of the first $500,000 of investment, purchase, construction, improvement of facilities for the production of livestock. Some of the eligible investments that were included this past year, acquisition, construction, or improvement of buildings, equipment for housing, feeding, waste management, and development of pasture. I think a real key is that all livestock species were included in the livestock grant program. The investment tax credit that was proposed for several years was varied solely. This past year, the investment grant program involved all of animal agriculture. We had 575 producers that participated. The grants totaled, the investments on the grant applications totaled over $150 million. We did one of the questions on the grant program was, will this investment increase employment opportunities as a result? and whether it be full-time or part-time, we didn't differentiate, but over 900 additional jobs were represented just on those 576 grants. About 60% of the grant applications indicated that there would be some increased employment that would result either part-time or full-time. Again, we awarded 38 producer grants this past year. Many of them were upgrading or renovation of current facilities, upgrading manure storage handling facilities, improving efficiencies, the better usage of labor. I think one of the real things that came very clear to me personally was that I had a chance to look at all of the applications and read the summaries that were part of the program. The expenditures that are occurring in animal agriculture are occurring at the local level. Many of the expenses and the receipts that were attached to them came within 30 to 40 miles of where these people sent them in. The local electricians, the gravel haulers, the welders, the equipment dealers, the hardware stores, the lumber yards that are in these communities were all benefactors of the investment. So continuing a program that rewards and supports a reinvestment in agriculture is really what Ag 21 is all about. One of the other things that we tried to implement is that we traveled to each one of the 38 grant recipients, and we've completed just about all of them. And we wanted to not only deliver some checks, because that's one thing we don't often get a chance to do is actually hand over an investment grant check, but we did that. But we also wanted to see the project. We wanted to see what improvements were being made. Some of the comments the people that came back wrote about their visits included from Marker County. Says here the producer completed construction of new freestall housing. There has been a substantial improvement in cow comfort, already resulting in a 2,000-pound herd gain. In the times of decreased milk prices, an investment that increases the production per cow is exceptionally important. Stearns County, the producer has installed a new earth and manure storage structure, new fencing and open lots, new lighting. The farm was previously in disrepair. Changes represent a substantial reinvestment in the farm. In Todd County, a producer converted a feed mixing area into a new parlor. His two sons and daughter are working with him, and there are plenty of plans for future expansion. A common thread throughout the livestock grant applications over and over and over again was that the investments were being made to transition to the next generation in livestock. The Next Generation Board, the Ag 21 program really is the focus for our reinvestment strategy, and keeping the dollars invested currently within the ethanol program, as Chairman Junkie indicated, is really the purpose behind this program. Initially, the funding is coming from a dairy development program that we've had over 10 years at the department. Structure is such where the short term, we're evaluating how we best serve our producers with a decreased fund. But from a long-term standpoint, we're excited about being able to have a program that will have some real meaningful support and help animal agriculture.
Representative Sherman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Zimmerman, you had referred to two-thirds of the grants that were awarded were for dairy. Was that proportionate to the requests for funding, or was there a little bias for dairy in the decision-making?
Chairman Junkie and Representative, I'd like to say there was a strong bias, and we didn't particularly watch that at all. But fortunately, either by plan or by accident, the percentage of the people that applied for the grants being two-thirds and the number of people that actually were awarded grants was about the same number. I can say this, is that the swine industry actually received more dollars, and it had to do with the size of their applications. Many of the younger producers that were coming in with new technology and new barns that were awarded grants actually had bigger projects, and they received a little higher amount of funds. But the number of people that received grants and applied for grants was almost identical at two-thirds.
Representative Fowles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The people that applied for grants that and didn't get them, are they on a waiting list waiting to get that? And if so, how many dollars do we have on that waiting list? And is it my understanding is that as we put more money into this program, we're going to need to pay those off first before the new ones that come in today get on the list. Is that correct? And if so, how many dollars are still on that list waiting to be paid off?
Mr. Zimmerman.
Chairman Junkie and Representative, we're waiting for some direction on that. If we look at the wording of the statute that was approved, you're absolutely correct. It says that those that were qualified for the grant program but were not able to receive funding because of lack of funds are on a priority list and will receive priority consideration for coming years. With one-time funding, it's very difficult for us to answer that question on what we do next. Are there projects that should be reviewed favorably? Absolutely. Do they receive priority over someone who is investing in 2009 that has a very creditworthy application as well? So we're going to need some direction from the legislature and what we do next.
Okay. I think that about covers. I just want to let everyone know that Vice Chairman Hamilton is working feverishly to think of a new name. As he looked at the 21st Century Ag Reinvestment Program, he said, well, that spells TARP. So right now we got 21st TARP as our first thing we can choose from. I'm sure that won't be the winner, but we appreciate the effort, and we're getting you all to think about what we can rename this if we go away from 21st Century Ag. Any other business before the committee? Seeing none, thank you for testimony, and we are adjourned.